Welcome to the Conversations Politics podcast from Canberra. I'm Michelle Grattan. When the new Senate takes over on July 1, Clive Palmer will have at least two senators and an alliance with a third. Possibly, if things go well for him in the new Western Australian Senate election, his numbers will be boosted further. The Palmer United Party will be in a very powerful position when it comes to the fate of Tony Abbott's legislation in the upper house. Clive Palmer, it seems like only yesterday when you were seeking or floating the idea of pre-selection for the Liberal National Party to run against Wayne Swan, then Treasurer. You got the cold shoulder from Tony Abbott and went on to start your own party, which has had a dramatic rise. Now you're in Parliament as the member for Fairfax. Are you surprised by what you've been able to achieve in so short a time?
Well, I just think it's a reflection of positive ideas about what Australia could become. And I think it's good that we've got a democracy that people can do that. And, you know, competition's a great thing, whether it's in business or whether it's in politics. So most politicians don't like competition. So I'm happy to be able to provide some. And with Wayne Swan, I never really thought I'd stand against him, but I just didn't like him because he wrote a nasty piece about me in The Age, which I thought was a little bit naughty, so I thought I'd give him a bit of a scare. It seemed to have worked.
Well, it seems to have had a lot of consequences. Critics would say that you've bought your political power. Mm. Do you agree that your large financial resources have probably been the biggest single factor in your success?
Well, no, I think it's our policies and what we're saying, because you can have a lot of money, you can have a lot of airtime. If you're saying the wrong things, it doesn't appeal to people, no one will vote for you. But what, you know, having the access does give you the ability to express a point of view. And a lot of people in Australia do agree with me, and that's why they voted for me.
Now, I guess that your fellow parliamentarians have been rather curious about how you'd go in Parliament and about the way you would operate and so on. But what have been your impressions of them and how they operate?
Well, I don't want to be unkind, Michelle, but I did say to my wife when I got down here the first week that she said, "What's Parliament like?" I said, "Well, it's like having a lot of people over one side that don't know much about much, and having another lot of people over the other side that doesn't know anything at all, being advised by people who know absolutely nothing." So that's what I said to her then. But I think that's changed a bit. I think there are there's certainly a lot of good people in Parliament of all sides of politics that are very committed to Australia and very committed to making a change, right? But I think some of our procedures and some of the way we go about business could be improved. And, I mean, we've got a great diversity in Australia and a great rich multicultural society. And diversity is one of our strengths. But in politics, we tend to have a narrow focus on the two sides of politics and what we can achieve. And it's a bit of a heretic if you look broader than that.
So what would you like to see changed in the way of parliamentary procedures?
Well, I think the ability for the independent members or members of not the two major parties to be able to speak. I mean, the most time I can get really is 5 minutes. It's very hard to compact what needs to be done in the country, or what we think needs to be done, or even to have it really debate if you've only got 5 minutes and the other sides have got to, you know, the whole period, the whole week. I tried to do that yesterday in my question to the Treasurer, where I encapsulated some ideas about the deficit, etc., the United States, Uzbekistan, and Equatorial Guinea. But you've got to come up with something like that to be precise so that you can stimulate thought on something.
Who are your mates in Parliament? Who do you have dinner with?
Well, I don't have any dinner with too many people. I've got a lot of invitations, but I have a good conversation probably with people from both sides of politics. You know, I have a good talk to some of the ministers in the Abbott government, you know, that I've known for 30 years. You don't stop knowing people because you're a minister. I remember George Brandis when he was in shorts, 14 years old, at a young Liberal Party meeting with a booming big voice. And everyone looked down the back and said, where's this voice coming from?
He's still got that, I think.
He's still got the voice, and they couldn't see George.
I don't know about the shorts.
Well, they couldn't see George because he was too short. They could just hear him. So I've known George Brandis all my life, and it's good to see how he's developed and good to see that he can make a good contribution to Australia. And, people on the Labor side, I've had a lot of discussions with a lot of female people on the Labor side because...
Like who?
I can't say who it is, but...
being a bit coy.
No, but basically, I'm a great supporter of more women in politics. There wouldn't be a woman in Parliament on any side of the House hasn't gone through a lot to get there. You know, it's a lot harder. And I think we have to realise that. And there still is a prejudice against women in politics, even though we love them. They're our mothers. We can't afford to do that. We can't help doing that, I should say. Yeah, but we need more women in cabinet, I think.
What about Cathy McGowan, the new Victorian independent member?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen much of her?
Yes, I've talked to Cathy. She sits next to me in Parliament, as you know, and she's come with me to the National Press Club. She, like me, experienced a lot of irregularities with the Australian Electoral Commission when she stood, and they found 1,000 of her ballots which they'd lost to get her elected, when they should have never lost them in the first place. So, you know, we had these sort of common experiences. But when you talk about the power, I mean, all of the things seem to happen to me in my election, but some of those things have happened to everyone in Parliament to some degree. It's just that there's an overwhelming confidence and faith in Australia that we want it to be a happy and a good country, and we don't want to ever look at ourselves too critically.
How are you balancing the politics and other parts of your life? Have you handed over most of your business affairs, or do you still run your businesses?
Well, you know, I sort of start work every day at 3 a.m. in the morning, and by say 7:30, I will have made somewhere between 500 and 600 decisions, and text that back to somebody.
This sounds like Kevin Rudd.
Well,
on
no
steroids.
In business, it's a little bit different. It's not a democracy, right? And, I've been operating a business for 40 years, so I'm highly efficient at it, right? What we find in a lot of businesses, people don't like making decisions. They take a long time to make them. With my experience, I only take an instant to make them. So if you can make critical decisions on things, even some not too critical, most of the things in my business can be taken care of.
So the early morning you devote to business, then you move on to politics.
That's right, yeah.
What time do you finish the night?
I normally finish about 7:30, 8 o'clock, go to bed early, right? So I can get up. You get better sleep if you sleep before midnight anyway. I dare say a lot of politicians here do the opposite. They go out and have a drink and they're talking to 12 o'clock, et cetera. Mm. But I find I think better if I get up early in the morning, get rid of the business, got no worries for the day, can reflect on what's happened, you know? And it's always good not to have too much of an expectation on what you have to do, to be able to reflect on what's really happening, you know? I think that's part of our role, where I've got the ability, like many, there's a couple of ministers, a couple of shadow ministers that have said to me, oh, you can say things that we can't say, right? And that sounds incredible, right? But they can't say them because they're in a party structure, right? Some of them may want to say them. They may want to talk about them in the party.
So they encourage you to say these things?
Oh, some of them do, yeah. They say that's a good thing to say. Like, you can imagine sitting in a party structure. I've been in a party structure, not in Parliament, but there might be something you think needs to be said, but if you do say it, the others might think less of you, right? And you're worried about your career. That's how things are compromised, right? And what's happened in Australian politics has been that that's sort of been overemphasised the last 20 years. It was always there, but if you go back 30, 40 years ago,
people spoke out a bit more.
They spoke out a bit more, and there was real debate. One of the things that today is that with 25% of people and the last election didn't vote for the Liberal or Labor Party. And that's really because they see there's a sort of falseness in it. There's not an honest debate, right? Because people are worried about their careers, they're worried about their endorsement, repercussions, what other people think of them.
Are any of these senior Liberals suggesting that you speak out against Tony Abbott's paid parental leave scheme? Because there seems to be a fair bit of discontent in the party about that.
Well, I've already spoken out against that, you know.
And the, are the Liberals encouraging you?
There are some people that agree with me on both sides of the House, because basically whatever rights you receive as a citizen of Australia, it's because you're a citizen of the country, not because you're working with someone. Now, I've got paid parental leave with my employees, but that's my contract with them. The government can't really step into something like that. That's between two people. If the government's going to provide a benefit, it's got to be equal to all people based on their citizenship. You can't have a stay-at-home mum having four kids not being valued as much as another woman in another part of society. All women deserve to have the same benefits, all men do, really, as well, from the government. The law can't discriminate. That's how I look at it.
Now, July 1 is approaching reasonably fast.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Well, people are beginning more friendlier to me, I've noticed this year.
I'll bet. Yeah. Have you had talks with Tony Abbott or senior people yet about your role in the Senate after July 1, your party's role?
We've had general discussions on a couple of things. But
with
we
Tony Abbott?
Not with Tony Abbott, but with other people in their structure, which I've known anyway for a long time, right? And you know, one of the problems we're faced with is that we've got a lot of new senators that haven't had a lot of experience in the Senate. And
you're in the reps.
Yeah, and I'm in the reps, and we've got to really deal with the volume of the whole government's legislation. And we need to have the ability to be able to deal with that efficiently so the Senate's not held up. It's terrible when you think you've got three or four senators that have got to consider the whole weight of government business. And on the other hand, you don't want to do it irresponsibly, right? So we're trying to work out procedures where we can start looking at bills in the Senate, say when they're introduced in the House of Reps, and be ahead of the game and have the right assistance to do that.
You wanted more staff, didn't you? How did you go on that?
Well, the Prime Minister's given all of our members one extra electorate staff person, right? And we haven't yet got to the stage of discussing what members of staff that we should have because of this unusual role. If we go to look at the Greens, they've got their normal electorate staff, but in addition to that, they have three senior advisers, two junior advisers, three assistant advisers, about an additional 13 staff. Now, it's not really for electoral purposes. It's to be able to deal with the volume of material that comes through, right? So we probably do need that administrative backup. If you don't have that administrative backup, you put it at a disadvantage. I don't think we want to be forced into making decisions which could be ill-considered.
Would you anticipate that most of the time your senators would be voting with the government?
No, I wouldn't anticipate anything. I think they'll want to look at the various issues and see what they look like in the economy. I mean, for example, paid parental leave. I don't think there's anyone in our party that would vote for that because we believe that women should be all treated the same.
Obviously, on the big things that the government is currently preoccupied with, the carbon tax, the mining tax, they expect your vote. Do you think those pieces of legislation, those two pieces of, or sets of legislation, will be through by the end of July?
Well, we don't know. That's to be honest with you. I mean, our policy on the carbon tax was that it should have been abolished from when it was first introduced. That's not the Liberal Party policy, right? On the mining tax, I've been a long advocate against it, right? So my personal view is the mining tax should go. But I can't expect our senators just to act on my personal view. It's got to be discussed with everybody, you know? But it seems to me that that's a pretty negative tax for Australia.
Be a big row if they went against you, I would have thought.
Well, I know. I mean, I'm really in the House of Representatives. I mean, when the carbon tax came up in the House of Reps, I abstained. I took the press's advice because they thought I had a conflict of interest. I didn't go down and didn't vote. And I think that's a healthy thing to do.
You have said you want it abolished retrospectively.
That was the party said that, yeah.
And, of course, your critics would say you have an interest in that because you have a liability. What's your answer to that?
Well, all Australians have an interest in their country. I mean, you pay tax, you've got an interest in the taxation system.
I think you have more of an interest in the carbon tax than I have, though.
Well, maybe. I don't know if you're paying any carbon tax. But that's true. We do have, but, you know, we have an interest generally that putting my personal business aside, I generally believe it's not a good tax for Australia.
But you can't entirely put your personal interest aside, obviously, on this matter.
Mm. Well, that's why I didn't vote in the House of Reps. I thought I could. I still think I can. But the press made a position, so I was prepared to bow to their wisdom.
But what about your senators? It's your party, as it were.
Well, I don't own the party. It's got a constitution registered with the AEC, and they're independent people.
You're the biggest shareholder, though, I think.
Well, I've got an influence over it, maybe because of ideas, right? But, you know, they'll look at all the legislation. This is one of the issues when it comes to staffing. They've got to get the right advice on what the actual bill says to make the right decision.
Just coming back to the to Tony Abbott, how do you think he's going as Prime Minister?
Well, I was a bit disappointed on the legislative program, right, because I would have thought there would have been something more happening in Parliament this week, right? There was very few new bills brought forward. And I know that the coalition had a long time in opposition, so it would have been thought there was a lot of frustration during that time of things that they'd want to do. So I'm a bit of a loss to know why we're here in Parliament this week.
Do you think there's more politics than action coming from the government?
Well, I think, you know, to be fair to everybody, since I've been watching Parliament for 40 years, right, it sort of devolved around this argument. The Labor Party says that we can balance the budget better than you can, and the Liberal Party says, no, you're to blame, we can balance the budget. I don't think all the economics of Australia are about balancing the budget. I mean, our total debt is equivalent to 3 or 4 months of our GDP. You imagine if all of your debts was only 3 to 4 months of your economic activity or your salary, you wouldn't have too many worries, would you? So it's not to say that we don't want to balance the budget. The US hasn't only balanced their budget 5 or 6 times in 50 years. They're the strongest economic power in the world. As I said in Parliament the other day, Equatorial Guinea and Uzbekistan have got the least debt in the world. We don't really want to follow their models. It's about making the country better, having a better standard of living, creating domestic demand. All of those things are what government should be held accountable to. Both of the parties have been able to sidestep those big economic issues by just concentrating on this one tack every time.
How do you think the government's handled the whole Manus issue, and what do you think of Scott Morrison's performance?
Well, I personally have got the view that the people that were involved in the incident that took place should have been stood down while there was any inquiry. That's what I think.
You mean the staff?
I mean GS4 people that went in and actually killed people, and that's pretty clear. And the police report that was being released says that they were hit over the head with timber, so they were killed. And
one person was killed.
One person was killed, and I'm told by people that that person was...
Or one person died.
Well, we don't know the circumstances. I'm told directly that he was... that the GS4 guards held him down while they jumped on his head till he was dead, or nearly dead, right? So if that's the case, that's a serious matter, right? And we really shouldn't be having those people guarding anyone that's in Australia's care. And then there's the question of compensation for the individual, right? He's been... yeah, what makes this different than someone drowning or something like that? This is a conscious person. We've got a duty of care of a country, and we have to accept that responsibility. And what's most important is that we do something now, immediately, not in 6 or 8 weeks' time when there's an inquiry, to ensure that the people who are currently in our care can be looked after. One of the difficulties with that is under the agreement, it's half PNG people and it's half Australians. The Australians are not allowed to be armed or to have any weapons. There's 3 circles of security at Manus. The outer two are manned by Papuan guards, some of them involved in this incident, and the inner ones manned by Australian nationals. Those people don't have any guns. They don't have any weapons. So if the other two areas decide to invade the camp, there's nothing they can do to stop them. So what happened in the incident, I understood, was that most of the Australian security, not all of them, but left to the vessel and left them to be. I think that's a bad situation for Australia, and we need to accept the responsibility.
Let's talk about the Western Australian election, which is very important for your party. Do you have any polling at the moment on how you're potentially going there?
Yeah, well, our internal polling that we did about 5 weeks ago indicated we'd have something like 1.3 of a quota. Right? Now, this is a different election than the federal election, obviously. We know who the Prime Minister is, Tony Abbott. We know who the Leader of the Opposition is, Bill Shorten. The result in Western Australia won't change that. But this is an opportunity for Western Australia to join the balance of power. And now people know that we do hold the balance of power, even without winning in Western Australia. And if they vote for us, they can put Western Australia in the balance of power, and we can fight for WA having a fair go. Because everyone knows that WA's carried Australia on its back for many years, hasn't had the proper rewards. Most of its GST is not spent in Western Australia. And Western Australians want to change all that. So that's what we'll be campaigning on.
And your candidate will be the same as last time?
Well, we announce our candidate... you're always a good journalist, Michelle. You're always after the story. We announce our candidates tomorrow in Perth, right? And there'll be 3 candidates standing, right? And some of them won't have stood before, right? And they'll be very high-profile people in the Perth
community. But your number one candidate, the same as...
Well, I can't say. I can't preempt the announcement for you, but you nearly got me.
What about Tasmania? The state election campaign's in full force there, and you've earlier thought that you've got good prospects. Do you think you will be able to hold the balance of power in that state?
Yeah, I think so. And our polls certainly show that. And the Liberal Party now is focusing all their attention on us, saying that we're yellow on the outside, but we're green on the inside. And it's quite amazing when they accuse me of being a green, and me and Jackie Lambie, we're hardly greens, but they've gone to that level. I think you really, when you look at our party's impact in Australia, you have to look at Tasmania on the 15th of March, whatever the outcome. You know, if we do well there, if we can hold the balance of power there, you can see we've gone from success to success, and that'll also pave the way for winning senators in New South Wales and taking the party beyond. Because you've got to remember, we're still only about 8 months old, right? So if we can, you know, win the balance of power in Tasmania, if we've got two candidates standing as independents in South Australia, South Australian Parliament got together and they changed the law so we couldn't be registered in time for the election. But two of our candidates are standing in the upper house under Independent Palm United. They may win a seat there and they may hold the balance of power in South Australia. Who knows? Good luck to them if they can. It's a bit of a long shot, but the real party's in Tasmania. And if we can win there and we can win more senators in Western Australia, well, then we've got the Queensland elections coming up.
Sounds like ambition unlimited. Well, just finally.
Opportunity.
Just finally, Clive Palmer, what about Titanic 2? How's that project going? Where's that up to?
Well, it's a big job, Titanic 2, because it took 7 years to design the original ship. Right? We're there in about 2.5 at the moment, because before you start, you've got to know where everything goes. You know, and we're aiming at laying the keel down in China in the third quarter of this year. We've already done the full... we've built a replica of what we're going to build, and we've tank tested that in Holland to check how it goes with the waves. They're now constructing all of the cabins, well, not all of the cabins, but a selection of them on land, so we can walk in and see what they're like before we actually commit to them. That'll take between now and about July, right? And after that, we'll finalise the plans, and I hope the keel's laid down in September. I would have liked to have done it quicker, but we want to make sure we don't make any mistakes on this one.
Clive Palmer, thank you very much for talking with The Conversation.
It's been a great conversation, Michelle.
And thanks to my producer, Matt Dawson, and to the listeners. See you next time.